welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. So today is my second time in our new studio at UCI's Applied Innovation Center. And this is a cool studio all decked out in bright orange. And you said because of it's Orange County, but it is quite invigorating ambience.
You know, there supposed is, to wake you up. Yes, exactly.
There is no sleeping in this. You know, sleep is not allowed. You know, Paul, last week I was fortunate to watch a video on mindfulness with singer, songwriter, and philanthropist Jewel. And she talked about her views of life, her history, her personal history, about her problems and successes in her career. And she's really quite intelligent and quite thoughtful. And among several of her, what I would call captivating ideas, Jewel concluded for her that the most important thing she can do in her mid-40s is to concentrate on a primary goal of nourishing her soul. That she said, as I was planning on mentioning later, but she did say, I discovered I was spending all of my time devoting myself to my purpose, and I was not devoting any time to myself, and I suffered consequences from that. So in today's show, I would like to feature our good friend Terry Hershey, author of 17 books, proclaimed public speaker, Zoom speaker, teacher, minister of grace and humanity, and our grace and human dignity, and so many other things. And Terry is a perfect person to discuss today's essential topic about how we can provide nourishment to our soul. And so with that brief introduction, Hershey, good to chat with you again, buddy.
Charles, that's good. That's good. When did Jewel say that?
It was in a mindfulness conference that was an online conference that my wife subscribed to that was on air last week, and she had about 30, 35 minutes. And she was really, I mean, I'm a Jewel fan, and she is quite articulate and quite thoughtful with several different new methodologies, or when I say new to me methodologies that she is seeking as a now single mom, I believe.
I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, as you know, Hersh, we talk on this show a bit about the meaning of life because it's part of our statement of purpose in the website, the next chapter with Charlie, the In Search of Meaning, Adventure, and Awe. So we will talk about meaning. But in hindsight, I wonder if we might have, I don't know if errantly is the right word, but put too much of an emphasis on the focus of externals when it comes to essential issues regarding the personal meaning of life, when it seems to be much more about the development of an essential inner life. You know, I look at my life, Hersh, and I've had goals all my life to measure my life, and was letting areas less insignificant accomplishments telling me I was okay. Now I realize that in my inside, I was screaming. I had a screaming need for nourishment. Have you ever felt anything like that?
The short answer is yes. The long answer is many times.
when did you, because you know you were so successful when we were here in Southern California together, in your, would that have been your early 30s?
Late 20s.
Okay, late 20s.
Started late 20s and through the 30s is when I lived, the early 30s.
Yeah, you were extraordinarily successful. And it seemed at that time, you know, while we talked about nourishment and relationship, we still were into counting numbers. How big am I? How much money am I making? How are my books
selling?
It had to
do with measurements. It had to do with the measurements, you know. And that probably is something you're going to even get to, but it's about, you know, how do we keep score? Let me start with this, because what Jewel is doing is not necessarily proscription or prescription. It's actually a paradigm shift. And that's what's different. That's what happens differently. So there's an African tribe. You'll be kind of relating to this, because some of the vibe of African thinking is you've already understood how different some of it is. But there's a tribe where the shaman, the religious leaders, there's no quote pastors, the religious leader, the shaman. So you go to them if you're experiencing complete depression. And so here, you get your medication and you go on your way, etc. But the shaman, the shaman asks you four questions. And this is what I loved about this. And so what Jewel is saying is, listen, I'm at the top of my craft, my score is high, and yet something's missing. Really, that's what she said.
Right, precisely.
And so the shaman, here are the four questions, and this is the paradigm shift. You ready?
Yes.
Number one, when did you stop dancing? Number two, when did you stop singing? Number three, when did you stop listening to stories? Number four, when did you stop being comforted by the sweet territory of silence?
Well, great questions. Number one and two is because I stopped when I discovered I was an utter failure. But
that's what's fascinating about it. You fail your only because that's why I need to introduce you to a brand new word, Charlie. The word is Balter, B-A-L-T-A-R, Balter, or E-R, B-A-L-T-E-R. Balter means to dance gracelessly.
I love it. It's so true. But you know where I dance gracefully is in my bathroom by myself.
Yeah, exactly.
But dance gracefully. It is not ungracefully or, you know, it is with, you know, I can actually
really
do it.
It doesn't matter. The point is, it's you. The dancing thing, when did you stop dancing? In other words, when did you stop? That's one thing you see. Is when did you stop experiencing joy? That's what the number first.
Yeah, when did you start responding to awe?
Exactly. And two, when did you stop singing? In other words, when did the awe come out or stop coming out of you singing? Three, when did you stop listening to stories? In other words, finding places where other people are on this same journey with you. And then the sweet territory of silence is where you're comfortable to sit and say, this moment is enough.
Yeah, and actually this moment is more than enough. But, you know, you really hit on something, Terry, when you talked about we live in this world of scorekeeping or measurement, and there just are some essential things to human existence that cannot be measured. And items of the soul cannot be measured. And as I'm reading more and more about items of the soul, it is the complete disqualification, annihilation is the word they use, annihilation of scorekeeping and measurements of the soul, because those are what they call the false self. Those are not the true self created in the image of God. Those are a false self that's created in a self-image.
Exactly.
And the true self cannot be measured. It's a whole different, again, I love your idea of paradigm shift, because it is a whole different paradigm. We really are talking about something totally different, aren't we?
Exactly.
Than what we're currently doing.
Yeah, and there's one more word. It's another African word. It's called Sankofa, S-A-N-K-O-F-A. It's from Ghana. Anyway, Sankofa means it's a good thing to go back and get what you have forgotten, which is, in other words, the paradigm that we knew as children. But for somewhere along the way, you ask 100 kindergartners who wants to be an artist when they grow up, 100 raise their hand. By the time they're seniors, there's two. In other words, we start with artists and we wean it out of them.
Because of measurements.
because they, yeah, now they need to be now because they have to be somebody successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have to meet certain requirements. Yeah.
So absolutely. I pulled this up because when you just did your intro, so I wrote yesterday, I do a daily blog now with Sabbath Moment, but I wrote yesterday about Henry Nouwen. And he spent the last years of his life at L'Arc. L'Arc is a community for disabled, handicapped, right. Well, challenged, whatever you want to call it, but a variety of handicapped people. And that's where he spent his life as a chaplain. Here's what I love about this. At L'Arc, for the first time in his life, he realized he was among people who wanted his love and did not need his lectures. In other words, they didn't need who he had been measured to be all his life. I love that. And for the first time in his life, because he was with people who just wanted him, he actually crashed and burned. He didn't know what to do.
Really?
He said, yeah, well, he said, my whole self-esteem was predicated on the fact that I was somebody, and now they didn't care if I was somebody. They just wanted me to be me.
And that is the ego-driven self, is it not?
Yeah, exactly. So he emerged from that with this new sense of self, this new paradigm of self, you know? That he's more authentic. Authentic's the word that we can add to this whole thing about the thing that Jules said, authentic. Because I'm more real. In other words, he said, I had to learn the difference between being productive and being fruitful. I loved that.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. Yeah, because I was, you know, as I alluded to earlier, things about being fruitful, those don't fit on a measurement scale. You know, things like kindness and love and compassion and empathy and just sitting around talking and being human with people, there is no rating scale for that. And yet they are as essential, if more, well, I would contend they're more essential than our measurement.
That's part of the paradigm. That's part of the paradigm shift is we invite people and encourage people to be kind and generous. And in other words, he said, these people just wanted him to listen, to love, et cetera. And yet, but if we carry with us into that the same paradigm that it has to be measured, then we get the same, am I listening enough? Am I listening more than the last guy, et cetera? Will I win the listening award?
Well, that's a great question. Will I win the listening award? Am I the most compassionate? Who we're going to give out the compassionate listening and empathy awards this year?
there's your talk right there. Yeah, we want to be more authentic and care for our souls as long as we can win an award for it.
Yeah, as long as it's recognized.
Exactly.
As long as it's recognized. It's with the unrecognized. I mean, Henry Nouwen is recognized in a select group. Now, he's a pretty large select group, but the majority of Americans have never heard his name and never know of the impact that he has made on the world and the impact that he's made on a faith tradition, that he's one of the most significant characters of the Christian 20th century. And yet,
yes,
most people will never know anything about him because L'Arc is not, you know, it's still just a small little ministry that he has. You know, it doesn't have massive buildings and campuses and you know, it's just a community that he set in service of. Were you going to say something?
No, okay.
You're waiting.
I'm here for you, Charlie. I'm here. I want to be empathetic in this call.
Yeah, I'm here to serve, Charlie. I'm here to serve. I read something as I was researching this that was from Marriage and Family First, Joy Malik, who works with deep feelers and people who are intuitive, empathetic, and creative. And she writes of these kinds of people, these probably more right brain than left brain type of people. She said, the soul resides beneath the ego or our conscious thinking brain. It is the root of who we are. The soul houses our intuition and instincts as well as our strongest yearnings and most resonant wisdom. What else in life is there than what she just mentioned? What is more important? Money and houses and Lexi.
Yeah. The short answer, of course, is nothing is more important. The long answer is it's very hard when you've grown up in a system or been trained in a system to know how, because the question is, how do I do that?
That's what I want to talk about, Terry, because that is our entire educational system is, and I'm not putting down meritocracy because I believe in some degrees of fundamental meritocracy. But when you make education all a meritocracy, you lose the breadth of talent and brain power of so many people in so many other directions that are just not built for mathematics and all the precision. They're built more artistically and built more intuitively, and our educational system and then our employment, our job system, none of those reward anything apart from that. So we have no model to go by, and we have to completely, this is what happens in the contemplative and mystical side, is they call it the annihilation of the ego, and it is complete mm-hmm. restructuring of the inner self, and it is a total of understanding the false self is a lying self, because it's a self that's based on accomplishments, ego fulfillment, adulation, keeping score, and that has to be annihilated.
Yeah, but here's what's interesting to me in the annihilation of self, because even in the times when I would go up to Valyermo, to the Benedictine monastery, and learn how to just sit and be silent, right?
Yes.
Just to learn how to be with Terry, because that's not a skill. See, this was interesting. I think of it, just that language I used. It's a skill I needed to learn rather than something that was already inside of me that I had a capability of. But if I take into that thing that I remembered. I remembered sitting with Francis, who you know from the Benedictine monastery.
Right.
He'd give me quote assignments. You know, I'd go out and with a pen and paper and have to write stuff down. And I saw them as assignments that I had to pass. In other words, there was a test here. And so even, this is what's interesting, Charlie, that even in sort of the getting rid of that sort of ego thing, I thought of it as a skill set that I had to learn, that I had to pass and get an A grade on. That's what's puzzling about this.
No, it's not puzzling.
I couldn't even screw up at it and be okay.
It's the way we're trained, Terry. I mean, it's the way we're trained for everything we do. And, you know, I am discovering that all of that means nothing, and that we are already all we need to be. We just need to get rid of the crap that is hiding it. But it already lies deep within us. But
yeah, and one of the gifts that, I mean, one of the things I take into these, the fourth question the shaman asked is, when did you quit being comforted by this, the stillness comfort of silence? That's it. I mean, the capacity to sit still and be okay, let the moment be okay. I mean, the thing about what the ego is the ego requires something for the moment to be okay.
Yes, it requires some sort of tangible validation.
Correct. In other words, I have to say I have to put a check mark beside something and say, okay, I nailed that.
Rather than walking out of that time alone where you're in thought by yourself, walking out and saying, I'm totally freaking confused. I have no idea if that was success, or failure, or what that was. There's no evaluation of it. Any of the things you say?
I'm just saying, or any of the things you say when you walk out of that, none of them discounted.
One of the things that that Jewel brought up, and then we're going to talk about alternative. What we're talking about, the need for nourishing the soul. We're going to talk about this, and then we'll take a break and come back, and we'll talk about ways to feed our nourishment. But Jewel did bring up a couple of different points that I found really fascinating, and she said the basic question she had to ask herself: why am I tolerating that which is intolerable?
Ooh, that's good.
That's a good question, isn't it? And we do. Yes. We tolerate that, and it's unhelpful, negative feedback. You know, I'm not against critical feedback. But I have a friend that I talk to. It's one of my colleagues at Wells of Life, and she's very hard on herself. And she says, I really don't need, you know, one of these people that says, I don't need critics because I'm my own worst critic. And, you know, it's not that she's refusing critical assistance, but she's so hard. And I just told her, you know, it's really important that you understand what you're looking at when you're evaluating yourself, is that it is okay to notice and to apprehend correctives and so better behaviors, but not to assign value to them. Your behaviors do not assign a value to it. Just leave it strictly as a behavior, strictly as something I want to work on. But it doesn't have to do with my value as a human being and my value of my actions. And so that really resonated with me, that we assign value to that which has no value other than measurement value. It has no human dignity, no authenticity, no deep humanity involved in it.
Right.
It is just strictly a bunch of stuff. Well, I want to go and I'm going to talk. I have some ideas, and I know you do, about what are some ways we can actually nurture our soul. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. Well, that was a nice little interlude that, you know, took about half the podcast. I'm Charlie Hedges, and this is The Next Chapter with Charlie. I am talking about soul nourishment with our dear friend Terry Hershey, and we have discussed sort of the need for it, the lack of soul nourishment, the habits of keeping score and merit systems and measurement systems. And know that for nurturing of the soul, none of those systems are working. Terry so aptly pointed out that what is required is a genuine paradigm shift. We have to think in a whole new way of thinking. And I have a list of different things that I would suggest for nourishing the soul, but I'm curious. I know you talked about dancing, singing, thoughtfulness, being alone, and one other. Apart from those, what types of, you know, let's get real tangible. What kinds of things can we do to nurture and develop and enhance and appreciate our soul?
Well, my list is really pretty simple. One is pause, sit still. I mean, literally sit still and have nothing with you. And it's going to be unbelievably uncomfortable for some people. And let that discomfort be there. In other words, get to know who you are. Just, I mean, in that.
Okay, let me challenge that. Okay, because I do believe in that, but I know for a lot of people, because of our monkey brains, that is so difficult. You know, I have spent 3 years in meditation, and I'm just now starting out of 20 to 30 minutes meditation, getting probably 7 to 8 good minutes out of my meditation because my brain is all over the where. How does somebody learn?
Wait a minute. Who said only sit still if you get good minutes out of it?
So there I go with my measurement system. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm saying just even start with that. It is a funny story. So I'm in the Benedictine Monastery. So I'm young, but I'm on my way to be somebody, and I want to learn how to do this. But so Francis says, you need to go out and sit in the trees for a half hour and talk to God. I said, let me get this straight. And he gives me some pen and paper. I got to go sit in the trees and talk to God and write down what God said. He said, yeah. I said, okay, I've never done that, but I'll give it a shot. So I go sit in the tree, and he wouldn't let me take my watch back in the days when he wore watches. And so a half hour, I'll just sitting in the trees, that's an eternity. So I'm thinking this is a complete waste of time. And so I come back, and he said, how was it? I said, what do you mean, how was it? It was terrible. I have no idea how to do this, what you're talking about. He said, yeah, but your paper's full of stuff. I said, of course it's full of stuff. I had a half hour to kill out there. I had to write stuff down. And so he's reading my paper, and on my paper it said, change oil in car. And then, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff that I needed to do in my life. And he said, so you didn't really talk to God? I said, of course I didn't. He said, and who are you to tell God he can't be involved in your oil change? The point was, I went into that endeavor assuming it had to be a certain way. Like I go into silence assuming it has to be a certain way. Like assuming that my monkey brain can't be there.
You know, that is so helpful because that is exactly what is happening with me in meditation and prayer right now, is that I've finally come to the place where I'm at a place now, and I'm who knows where I will revert to, but that I don't. The monkey brain is part of my mind, and it's by allowing it, it's calmed it down, by giving it permission to exist. It is actually settled, that's it, Charlie.
I mean, that's exactly right. You've actually welcomed it to be there. You're allowed to be here.
And then it no longer requires being there as powerfully as that. Yeah.
It no longer needs to have primary attention now.
In line with this, St. Teresa of Avila advocates in her book Interior Castles, Interior Castle or Interior Prayer? I'm reading it right now and I can't remember the name. It's Interior Castles. And she advocates self-awareness and humility. And self-awareness with self-reflection. And that's a lot of what you're talking about, isn't it? It is through self-reflection and through this time, we discover a self-awareness and we are bombarded with the tyranny of the urgent, the cluttering of the mind, and the process of decluttering. And the irony is, the more you attempt to declutter, as you just explained to me, the more clutter seems to come in. And it's just, as another Jewel quote that I have written down on a piece of paper, she says, peace is not the absence of something, but the harmony with whatever it is, whatever the truth is. It's harmony, it's not abandonment, not absence of.
Yeah. Because one of the things, practically, when people say they sit still and they want to know, quote, how to do it and how to do it right, you know, just like you're talking about with meditation, like all of us do when we start with that, we want to be able to get to the place where, am I doing this right, so to speak? And so number one is sit still, find stillness, and it's going to suck. I mean, in terms of our mentality about how it should be, it's going to suck. But there will become a time when you'll actually say two words, which is Meister Eckhart's thing about prayer. You'll say, thank you. Thank you. And when gratitude enters that space, it's a messy space, but when gratitude enters it, it's unbelievable. And because you don't need to tidy it up anymore. And once that power of gratitude is there, you know this for a fact. You actually can put down some of the tyranny, the urge that keeps bombarding you. You can just smile at it and say, not today.
You're so correct. And so there really is an irony here. The more you try to fight the devils within you, the demons within you, the stronger they get because they resist. But the more you can ignore them and just sit and listen and be quiet, the more the universe or whatever the source or God or whatever you choose to use can come in and intervene. And instead of me sort of determining what the outcomes need to be, I've already screwed up outcomes. Why am I trying to make this an outcome? I've already proven that outcome base is a failure.
Yeah, go with that sentence, Charlie. That's your sentence. I mean, if outcomes has been what I've screwed up to even start the meditation, why would I take outcomes with me into that? You're right.
Yeah. Another thing I want to get
up. Great.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say there's a great story from a long time ago about a young monk. He goes to the abbot and he says, "Yeah, I'm supposed to be praying, but I suck at it." And I'm not sure if he said that in the 1600s, but it sounds good. Anyway, he said, I suck at it. So why? See, because I sit there in my monkey brain, basically. I'm supposed to be praying, but all I get is all this stuff. And he said, and the abbot said, well, what do you do? He said, well, I keep trying to swat it away. You know, like insects. Swat it away so I can be prayerful or peaceful or whatever we're supposed to be. He said, why are you doing that? He said, what do you mean, why am I doing that? He said, well, all that stuff needs peace, too. Why don't you invite it in?
You know what you remind me of when you said that? I don't know if you remember a lecture. Boy, I'm going back, Terry, 30 or 40 years to a singles conference I think we did. I want to say Florida, but I don't know if that was right. But we had a speaker from Catholic school in Pittsburgh. And I think it was Suzanne Muto. Do you recall that?
Wow.
Do you remember?
Long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, and no one liked her because she was just over everyone's head. She was over everyone's head, and she, you know, today you and I would probably look at her as a spiritual director, but she said when she was talking about distractions, she said it's like eating food in Spain. She said, in Spain, there were so many flies. And so you had a choice while you were eating is to brush away the flies and spend all your meal time brushing away the flies, or just accept the flies and eat your food.
I forgot that. That's great.
Isn't that? I mean, and that's kind of what we're saying is accept what this is. And just go with it, as Jewel said, in that it's to be in harmony with what really is rather than to be in disagreement with it, challenging it, fighting it.
And the second thing, and I'll throw it in because I don't know where you are time-wise, but the second thing is in the sitting still, and when we're doing that, just in the eating the food, you've already shifted your focus on the food and not the flies.
Yeah.
And so that's the second thing is, what are you paying attention to? So Joshua Tree National Park, which you know, which is north of where you are in the high desert. So when we went there, we used to go there a lot when Zach was just a boy. And when you go into the building there, when you're in the national park, they give you maps, etc. And they give a little booklet to kids. This is for young kids. And it has coloring things and other stuff. And the most remarkable thing, there's a page. This was for kids under age of 10, Joshua Tree. And it says, find a place where you can sit quiet for 10 minutes. And you're thinking, okay. But then it gives them a list of things to look for, to pay attention to, that will make them glad. Things they've never seen before. Things they've never noticed. In other words, it was remarkable that there's going to be flies, but you have no idea how good the meal is.
Yeah, and they give the neophyte or the beginner things to look for and things to look at when we're wondering. They're not measurements. They're not rules. These are just opportunities, options. Mm-hmm. Things that you can,
yeah, exactly.
That you can
you don't,
do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Not prescriptive.
You don't win anything for doing this. Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not prescriptive.
No.
You know, I'll tell you another thing I really want to spend a couple of minutes on, because it's vital to me and to me personally, and that is nurturing myself. It is essential somehow that, you know, I've called them the VDPs, the very draining people. You have very draining, you have neutral, and you have replenishing people. Is that we need to dismiss the very training and toxic people to the degree that we can. You know, some are family members and it's more difficult, but even then it can be done. But I just think our soul is so damaged by draining and toxic people.
100%.
I mean, because and then it's not all their fault, because we attach ourselves to them. We attach ourselves to that opposite feeling, and we allow ourselves anger, resentment, or disagreement, rather than just blowing it off, just saying, I need to get rid of these people. Do not need to be in my life. And we need to replace them, because if, you know, you just leave that hole, then more will come. But find those replenishing relationships. Do you remember how you and I started a friendship? Have we ever told this story?
About writing letters, you mean?
No.
Oh,
meeting at Knollwoods in 1986 or 87. I don't know what year. It was one of those years. And I had just been to a conference with Bill Hybels at Willow Creek. And he talked about that very draining people, neutral people, and replenishing. And he asked us to make lists. And at the time, I was a singles minister. And my my very draining people list went on for pages. My neutral people were my colleagues. You know, and I remember this, Charles. And I had zero replenishing relationships. I did not, apart from my wife, I had no replenishing relationships. And I knew you and I sort of tracked at the time. And I had lunch and I said, you know, basically I asked you on a date, you want to be my friend? And we'll just test this out. We'll test out. I explained that idea, and you just resonated and said, let's go for it. And here we are 40 years later.
Yeah, that's great. Actually, the actual truth is, I said, if you pay for lunch, I'll be as replenishing as you want me to be, for as long as you want me to be.
That was the Terry Hershey of old.
If you
that was the quite frugal Terry Hershey of old.
Exactly. You have no idea how replenishing I can be if you buy my lunch.
but you know, I think that is important, that we find these replenishing people and that we look for replenishing people in our lives. And then the ones that we find,
Charlie,
that we try to spend
you make
time.
There is, yeah, the point you make is extraordinary, necessary, is it was intentional. This is the power of that. It was intentional. And the intentional part of us doing the letters, that's intentional. In other words, if I just do it by default, then I have what I have. But if I say, wait a minute, I get to choose here, that's a big deal.
Absolutely. So Let's sort of wrap it up. I don't have a written conclusion, and let's just chat just a little bit around the essential nature of nourishing your soul. That we are, in my opinion, in my frame of thinking, we are soulful people before we are cognitive people. That our essence, our eternal essence, in the cosmos is a soulful essence, not just this thinking brain. And we in our system today want to nurture the thinking brain and not the essence of who we really are.
Yes, and I would add to that that the reason is because it's in our DNA. We are primarily souls, not bodies, not minds.
And I agree.
Because it's in our DNA, that's what makes sense. To replenish that makes sense.
Well, may we continue our replenishing relationship, and may our listeners find people to replenish them, find areas for nurture, and find ways to diminishing the scorekeeping. You know, as I told my friend, your behaviors are not, don't equate them with values, just strictly behaviors. And there are things that I want to work on, and that's great, but don't assign value to your worth as a human being by your performance at your job.
100%.
Okay, my friend. Thank you so much. I appreciate, always appreciate time with you. You are so insightful. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.